Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 324 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is June 10th, 2014. I know it's a Tuesday. I was traveling yesterday back in Baltimore for the Rivals Five-Star Challenge. We got to see, 100 of the best players in the country, best high school prospects that USC are going after, a whole bunch of them, so we can talk about that. But I want to let you know that's why we're not doing a show. We didn't do the show on Monday. We're doing it on Tuesday. If you have any questions or comments, always email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's the easiest way. Or you can go to peristylepodcast.com, leave a voicemail there, or you can call our voicemail number, 206-888-6755. We're going to bring in Dan Weber later on the show, talking about the team, USC summer workouts, and we got Coach Harvey Hyde. We want to talk to him in the first segment because today, Coach, is the very first day that USC is off probation for the last 4 years. So all the USC administrators and football players, everyone, give yourself a pat on the back. You are no longer on NCAA probation.
Well, I agree. This is a great moment. It's been a life-termer for a traffic violation, okay? I mean, you got a parking ticket and Paul D. D's and those guys, those committee guys, got together and decided to give the death sentence. Gave your last meal. What'd you want to eat? And did that. And I know a lot of people say it a lot kinder than what I say it. They're very smooth at the way they say things and write things, but it's the most ridiculous thing that people that call themselves professionals with some with doctor's degree, some that probably have been attorneys and lawyers and whatever they might be and successful in their field, college presidents, whatever you want to call it, can come down with that type of decision on USC. And I'll always remember this decision because it was ridiculous. And then allow others to slide by because they determined afterwards that it wasn't right and they can't do the same thing for some of the other universities. I believe in treating everyone the same. They don't believe that in USC, and I'm still very disappointed on the Pac-12, the way they didn't rally to support USC on what the penalties were. So it's a bad memory for me as far as a lack of, they call institutional control at USC. I call it a lack of institutional control at the NCAA to be able to justify that. Now, did I let you know what my feelings are?
You certainly did, Coach, and we're going to talk more about that because we got some questions to get to. I'll make some clarifications, but I wanted to thank our sponsor first, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website, or you can give them a call at 1-800-888-7287. I don't know if you saw, but the LA Kings are now up 3-0 in the Stanley Cup Final, so you might not get a chance to get another game in Staples Center because they're playing in New York, and if the Kings can close it out. But there's a lot of games going on with the Dodgers and Angels and maybe another Kings game here in Staples Center. We'll see. But you can go to sctickets.com, and they will hook you up there. And, Coach, I get a lot of tweets about this. We do have a question, too, about the sanctions, about the nice article that the LA Times wrote about the sanctions ending. But people don't kind of realize the sanctions really aren't over as far as the recruiting, the initial scholarship sanctions. Those are done. The next time USC has a signing day, signing class, it can be a full class of 25. So there's no more restrictions there. But they did appeal the overall scholarship number, which is 85 normally. Now for USC is 75. There's still one more season of that. This upcoming football season, USC can only play with at most 75 scholarship players, and they won't even be that close to that, actually. So that's still going on. But probation, which, what's tied into allowing fans to go to practice and be on the sidelines or showing up at camps and things like that, that probation period is now over. But because they didn't appeal that, that's actually ending before the full brunt of the sanctions are done. So the sanctions won't actually be done until USC plays their last football game, then there'll be no more restrictions.
So now let me ask you to make it clear for all of us so we understand it, including myself. This year, the fans will not be able to go to practice again?
Oh, no. Okay, so I'm sorry if I made that confusing there. This year, USC has to play with at most 75 scholarship players, but because probation is over, it's now not an NCAA rule that fans can't attend fall practice. So I do believe, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but if Steve Sarkisian wants to, he can allow fans back on Howard Jones Field to watch practice. They don't have to sit up in the deck. Now he is going to close practice during the portions of practice to the media. I'm not exactly sure what he's going to do with the fans. I think there was some talk before, and things have kind of things could change, and he could change his mind. He could also make coach the in June. There's a whole bunch of camps, skills camp, lineman camp, Rising Stars camp. Now fans can go to those if USC wants them to. But according to what the school has told us, they're going to keep those closed for now. So it's really just lifting off that NCAA restriction of what USC can do. It's now up to USC to decide what they want to do.
Exactly. Thank you very much for explaining that to me. And I hope I assisted some of the others to understand that, because I remember when Steve Sarkisian was on the staff and he saw the enthusiasm of people coming over and watching practice, and kids and former or little kids that are possible players in the future, and parents and everybody, coaches. It was just great. It was great, and I thought it picked the level of practice up, because when you have a great group of people at a practice, your players perform better. They don't want to look bad in what they do. So I think you get better practices when you have people at your practices, and I don't know. That means they'll lift that sign-in thing and all the things we have to do to get into practice, and I think it'll be great. I hope Steve Sarkisian does that, and of course you got to have some closed practices, because you want to be able to focus and get some things done that everyone sometimes distracts from. So we'll see what happens. I hope it works out for everybody.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But, we do know, and we're going to mention this LA Times article by Gary Klein, that the USC compliance department is double in size, at least of what it's been before, and it's a lot bigger than most schools have. And so maybe that sign-in process continues. We'll have to wait and see. And I wouldn't say that whatever happens in this first year coming off probation – it's how it's going to be from now on. I think there's going to be a feel-out period. They might want to go back gradually. We'll see. They might like the way things have been closed off, and they feel more comfortable that way. It's really hard to tell. So we'll kind of see with that. But Stephen Poway wrote this long email in, Coach, and I want to kind of read it to you, and it'll kind of get us talking about it. He said, "I'm generally supportive of Gary Klein of the LA Times. He does a pretty good job day in, day out. I've never found his articles to be slanted one way or another. However, the articles in Sunday's LA Times about the USC probationary period coming to an end were not some of his best work, and he says that's putting it mildly. Here's his concerns. Number one, regarding the quote, the NCAA declined a request to interview President Mark Emmert or its top compliance official to discuss the USC case for this and other articles in this collection. That should have been the headline of the article. Are you kidding me? The NCAA won't even go on record to discuss the case? That's despicable and cowardly. Number two, he says, the list of penalties, see the punishment inset, were the two glaring omissions and probably more. There were two glaring omissions and probably more. The 75 scholarship limit, which Dan and you have discussed many times, really means the 30 scholarship penalty, because it's really much higher than 30 over the years. And students in the first 2 years of the bowl ban were allowed to transfer at will, the infamous free agency rule. And so he didn't want to mention how many students have did that. And of course that really hurt. And they said, and Penn State wasn't even mentioned in the article. Gary Klein did mention Ohio State, Oregon, and Miami in his discussion of how the NCAA seemed to have given USC an unfair deal. But to me, the most glaring example of the complete double standard against USC is to compare what happened at Penn State, where multiple felonies occurred, an cesspool of corruption over a very long time, to USC, and then dare to compare the penalties. My blood pressure probably goes up 20 points each time I think about it. All I can say is thank God probation is almost over and fight on." That's from Stephen Poway. Whew, sorry, that was a mouthful, Coach.
No, no, he gets fired up. He could be in my huddle. I like his way of describing things. I like people that speak out, whether I agree with it or not. It's always great to hear. And Steve, I agree with you 100%, or Stephen, and on what you're saying. If you're a leader of an organization, you should be proud of the organization and what it's done. And you should be able to address questions from the media. If someone requests a time where you're available, and should do this and explain your sanctions and why they were done, and compare with other sanctions and be able to answer questions. Otherwise, you're somewhat embarrassed about your organization and what it did, and you can't defend it. You've got to be able to defend your actions and be proud of what you do and what you stand for. And I agree with you, Stephen, 100%. 100% of a lot of those things that you mentioned, Stephen, as far as athletes being able to transfer and all the different things, all add up. And this is like I mentioned earlier in the segment, it's something that I'll always remember. And I don't think the penalties really fit the problem they had. And and I'll never agree with what the NCAA did. But being USC, as Gary Klein mentioned, I believe he mentioned this in the article, I did read it all, that only schools like USC and Alabama can survive from this. Miami survived from it. And as he mentioned, there's been two 10-game winning seasons during this period of time, 35-17 during these 4 years. Most universities in the country would jump for joy if they had the opportunity of having that type of record. Now you look forward, you go forward, you get great recruiting classes, and now, of course, it's not as easy to win in the Pac-12 because the Pac-12 has all become stronger programs with great coaches and great facilities. So you fight your way back now and put yourself in a position where you can compete again for a national championship, and I think that's what USC's thoughts are.
Yeah, and I think I love Gary's a great guy. I think he does a great job, and I didn't really have the kind of issues with this article that Stephen Poway did. It was trying to be informative, and certainly he could have gone on some different things. The Penn State aspect to me is the most interesting, Coach, because those sanctions were actually comparable to USC's. They were harsher than USC's, but the NCAA pulled back before the sanctions really even hit. So some people feel like Penn State was punished, but their scholarship reductions, the reductions that were proposed by the sanctions, were actually cut by like 81%, and they're not going to they hadn't had to go through any of the scholarship sanctions yet. Those things take a while to get going. That's why it's been so long for USC, and you're still seeing it going on even this many years later. But I think that the NCAA got what they wanted by putting out a bigger penalty than USC got. But before those sanctions really even begun, they cut them drastically by 81%. So they're never going to have to go through what USC went through, not only for 3 years, but they don't even have to do it for 1 year.
No, you're exactly right. And like I just mentioned, USC was able to do it, an impossible situation, and do it quite successfully. I hate to say it that way because they've been really operating under very difficult terms and frustrating terms for all of us as far as practice and boosters not being able to fly on the plane and all the little things that people don't know in the background as far as compliance directors looking over everybody's shoulder. And as even Pat Hayden mentioned, according to Gary Klein's article, we thought the first year we put too much pressure on the coaches. We did too much looking. They were doing more compliance than they were graduating students, and also worrying about what was happening on the court and fields and pools and so on. You've got to allow and respect the coach and allow him to do what he's hired to do. And I would hope compliance is better since you have 11 compliance directors. I don't know if they have that many in the FBI. But, I mean, to have 11 compliance directors and be watching everything that's going on. And I think the key to this whole article, if you remember the last sentence, what Robert said, the attorney in charge of the compliance department there at USC, says, can it happen again? Oh, yes, it can. So it doesn't make any difference how many directors you have working on it. The type of thing that happened with USC and the Reggie Bush situation, Could happen anywhere. Could happen with a parent that lives in Florida. I mean, are you really responsible for what's happening in a home in Florida? I mean, how do you know? Do you have someone live outside the front door and monitor everybody that goes in it? I mean, there's extremes, and it gets ridiculous. So, you know, yes, it can happen again. It can happen to any university in the country. And I just hope it doesn't. But again, these things, nothing is foolproof. Nothing is for sure. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, that's that'll be our enough talk about the sanctions and probation
that's
and all
enough.
That kind of stuff. That's enough. But let's talk a little football. We have a question here. Local South Bay guy has a question for you, Coach. Here you go.
Hi, Ryan. This is Tom from Torrance, and I enjoy the podcast. My question is to Coach Harvey. And, Coach, with this type of offense, you know, the up-tempo offense that we have, how can we control the ball? Kill the clock, say if we have 3 to 7 points lead and only a few minutes left. We saw the offense in the spring game, and it wasn't that good. So I'm afraid that we'll be giving the ball right away to the other teams. So please explain to us how can we do that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I'll tell you, it's built to, score quickly and get a lot of points. Let me mention this to you. Do you remember a couple of years ago when Chip Kelly's Oregon team was driving down the field and they were just whipping? I mean, guys were wide open. A touchdown pass was dropped, I forget by who, from Oregon. And he slowed the game down. If he'd have continued running the hurry-up offense, he'd have beat SC. I remember that game distinctly. He slowed it down and played a style he wasn't used to. I'm not sure how they lost. They missed a field goal, I think. He decided to go for a field goal, which is something that Chip Kelly never does. So it's a little bit different to change your philosophy towards an end of a game when you're always a hurry-up type of offense and you decide now to slow things down and it gives more of a time for the defense to get lined up and they know what you're going to do. So I agree with you. I think that if you go with a style, you play with that style. But that's what you do, and that's what you do well. You can't change it. So, yes, I'm really concerned, and one of my big question marks, and I've talked to John Robinson about this. I've talked to a lot of guys about this, coaches. I'm actually waiting to see what the transition is from a power type of offense at USC to a hurry-up offense. I really am. I'm the type of guy that believes that USC, Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, some of these teams just get better players, should get better players, not that the other teams don't have great players. And I'm into playing great defense, special teams, and beat you to death with the offense, keep the ball away from you where you never get it again. Just make you throw in the white flag. You've heard me talk about this before. So, to get away from what USC has done for 20, 30 years, back with John McKay and John Robinson and everybody else, it's going to be real interesting for me to watch, to see just how the crowd adapts to it, the fans, the players, coaches, the whole thing. Now, obviously, the Washington staff believes in it, or they wouldn't be teaching it. It's going to be real good to see exactly if this style of offense fits in at USC. It certainly should. It's got great players, but this offense was designed to make up the difference between teams like USC, to be able to score quickly. And SC's philosophy was just pound you and keep the football so you can never score. So we'll see what happens with this. And you're right. In the spring game, the defense really dominated the offense they didn't move the ball around much. They didn't work on much goal line in the spring game. They kicked four field goals in the spring game, and it wasn't really what I may say for most of the fans that went there to see a hurry-up type of offense. Very exciting. I saw people leave early. People were somewhat discussing and talking about the same things you're talking about. I know we discussed it here on the podcast as well as with other people. It didn't just seem like they had got it yet. So we'll see what happens here in the fall. You've got some recruits in, too, and they should know the offense better. But I'm still in that position of saying, I'll wait and see. I'm not sure.
Yeah, when I watch that stuff, Coach, and you see the shotgun stuff all the time, the thing that bothers me the most is like the third and ones, and you're still lining up in the shotgun. And that's controlling the clock. I think they can do some things where they're still going to run the football a lot. But I would like to see a little bit more under center and in those short yardage situations. That's the biggest pet peeve I think I have.
Well, yeah, you do, and they'll probably have some of that as the season comes around here in the fall camp. They'll work on some goal line offense with the snap directly to the quarterback, but unless you work on it, you're not very good at it. So how much time do you have to get good at all these different things? You don't. You can do too much and not be very good at anything. USC becomes the same type of offense as they have probably everybody in the conference except for Stanford. Maybe Oregon State is still doing now they're running the same offense as 90% of the country is.
We got one last question for you, Coach, and is about Utah. And this is Melvin. He said, since we traveled to Utah this week, and I'll be on the road when the Monday podcast comes out. Actually, it's coming out on Tuesday, Melvin, so you should be okay. He wants to know about the Utah game. Can you tell us what to expect possibly from the University of Utah football this season? All I know is that the head coach has had a great reputation, Kyle Whittingham, and USC plays Utah on October 25th in Utah. And it's kind of interesting, Coach. They were only 5-7 last year. They were, at one point they were 1-5 in the conference or 1-6 in the conference, and their one win was over Stanford, which is kind of crazy. They end up beating Colorado to end the season. But it was 5-7 overall. And this year, they have to go play at Michigan, which is pretty tough. And they also play a common opponent, out-of-conference opponent from USC in Fresno State. They get Fresno State at home, and USC also gets Fresno State at home. But any thoughts on this team that finished 5-7 last year, Coach? What you think what they could do to turn it around this year?
Well, Colorado and Utah are having a tough time in the Pac-12. They are. Utah was a very strong opponent or a very strong team in, of course, the Mountain West Conference. Colorado was in the Big 12. They brought in, really, I don't know why they brought these two teams into the conference. You've heard me say that. Larry Scott wanted to expand. I think you bring people in when they can really bring something to the conference, and certainly these two teams are going to come in because of the amount of money that they got from the TV revenue and so on. It changed their whole athletic department. But you've got to be successful, too, in the conference. What sports really is Utah successful in as far as in the Pac-12? I don't know, but you probably know, but I don't really read about them being very successful in any of them. Colorado basketball. They're pretty good in. But I think Utah's in a little bit over its head. I think that with Willingham, I think he's a great coach. I really think he is. But, he's on the bubble. He brought in Dennis Erickson last year to be offensive coordinator, and I think he made a change there now where he's not the offensive coordinator. Somebody else is. Erickson's still there. I think Erickson's a great coach, and I like him very much. He's trying to do everything he can, but unless he wins this coming year, he's in jeopardy of losing his coaching job. I really believe that. I hate to say that, but after all what he's done there and the number of years he's been there, but you got to win. That's what the whole story is. You got to win. So what they need to do is get great players. They got to get better skilled players. They normally have great, great offensive linemen and defensive linemen, as we all know. But I think they're a little bit behind in their skilled players. They've got to move up in the recruiting ranks. I don't think they recruit the same players that the other Pac-12 schools recruit. If you look at the recruiting numbers and you see where they're ranked, they're hardly ever ranked up there in that maybe last as far as in the Pac-12 along with Colorado. Preseason publications have them way down as far as what the media thinks where they'll finish. Colorado last in their division, Utah, I think, next to last. So it's a very interesting year for both Colorado and also Utah. What they need to do is get better players, and if you don't have great players, you don't win, and that's the answer.
Yeah, well, USC has to try to avoid that Stanford loss. If Utah struggles like they were last year and they still go out and beat Stanford at home, or Stanford kind of laid an egg there, USC is certainly going to have to avoid something like that. So we'll see. It's still a dangerous team, Coach, but yeah, I agree. They're just not – haven't made that transition quite as well. I like Kyle Willingham a lot as a coach. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say at Pac-12 Media Day. But that's all we got for you today, Coach. So thanks for coming on the first day where USC doesn't find itself on NCAA probation in 4 years. Kind of crazy.
Well, again, I want to thank you and all of our listeners out there, and have a great week and enjoy the summer because football's not that far away.
All right. Fall camp's coming up. You just check out uscfootball.com for all the latest on the summer workouts to get your little fix before fall camp starts. All right. Thanks again, Coach, and everyone else. Back in a minute. Going to talk to Dan Weber, uscfootball.com beat writer.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back. Peristyle Podcast. We got Dan Weber joining us, uscfootball.com. Beat writer extraordinaire has been out at all the summer workouts. How you doing, Dan? What's going on?
Doing good. Had another workout last night. They're pretty far along. I mean, these things are running more like, you know, real practices. And heck, and a lot of that is because they do want to get up to speed on the up-tempo offense and the hand signals and the you know, all the sideline signals and what have you. So they almost have to be more organized than we've seen in the past. And they get more done. There are more defensive players there. There are more defensive players there. So, you know, you're throwing the ball every time when they're going 11 on 11 or whatever against, like, the full defensive line with Leonard Williams and Antoine Woods and people that make it tough on the quarterback. So it has a different feel to it, more of a, like, real practice feel. I mean, they start with a walk through like they do in a regular practice of what they're going to do, and then they go ahead and do it, and they break into individual periods. It's kind of like a mini regular practice. I'm real impressed with what's getting done and the way they're doing it. And I think for people, and there are people who are, you know, kind of worried that, well, first few games will how much of an adjustment, you know, to the new offense and how much of an adjustment. And I can understand that for people who saw the spring game where they really, I mean, if you want to use the word sandbag for the spring game, you'd be legit, that'd be legit. And so I know there are people thinking the spring game represents something. It really didn't represent anything. I mean, it didn't look like even any of the practices, but I've been real impressed with the way they're conducting the summer workouts and what they're getting done and how many reps they're getting. That's, you know, been the secret all through spring, but I'm real impressed.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I saw we put up on uscfootball.com. You had some ghost notes on the Peristyle. Your instant analysis video is up on the site, and also there's a highlight video. You get to see some of the guys running around and some good plays on defense we saw from Monday's practice. But also, Adoree Jackson was out there for the first time. Looked like he was playing corner.
He was getting some tutoring from Josh Shaw during the walkthrough. You know, here's where you stand. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. And then Gerald Bowman came over. So Adoree got, kind of double teamed in terms of, you know, some of the things that he could expect to look look for in terms of different defensive alignments and how they would expect him. As he was the wide guy in corner, like when they went, the first time he went kind of live in 11-on-11, they went three wide, and he took the wide guy. You can tell he's doing some thinking, and you can also tell he's got some serious catch-up speed. I mean, and he's going to need it right now because that's what he's going to be doing, a little catch-up speed. And then they ran after the back-to-back interceptions, really nice deflection by Leon McQuay. He should have caught it and went through his hands. And then Ryan Dillard grabbed the ball in the air off of Max Brown. And then Cody went deep and playing deep, deep center field with Sua in a crowd. And Sua made a great play and came up with the ball. So they were back-to-back. So the next play, they come out and they go right at Adoree with Darius Rogers. It's like a 20-yard back shoulder throw. Perfect execution. And somebody from the offensive side said, back shoulder rook to Adoree. You know, just making the point that that these guys can make some plays. And it was really... If they can run that back shoulder like that, I was, you had flashbacks of that Arizona State game where they ran that thing so often and so well as they have against USC. But they're doing a lot of things that make a lot of sense, and they're doing them over and over and over again. Some of the stuff they're running out of the backfield to Buck Allen and Trey Madden, wheel routes and little flare stuff where the play starts one direction and ends up coming back the backside, and you got a Trey Madden or a Buck Allen isolated on either, a smaller or a slower guy in the open field. It's going to be fun to watch.
Let's see. You mentioned Buck Allen, Dan, and we did have a question from Ron. He said he's heard Buck Allen's had a very good offseason. What else have you seen from him?
He just looks, I was telling Chris, it's just like, it's fun just to be there watching him just, in the walkthrough. I mean, he's so quick and strong and he catches the ball so well. I mean, that's the thing that always set Buck, I thought, apart from everybody else, was he had been such a, great wide receiver in high school. And, it's, a little over 6 feet tall and 215 pounds with the kind of quickness and athleticism he's got. But to be able to catch and convert the ball up the field, the yards after catch, and it really looks like they're doing a lot of things to get the ball to Buck in space. And there are a lot of ways to do that. And they're going to give people problems in terms of matchups. If the wide receivers and if they can get a tight end, you really have to respect down the field. It's going to be hard to know how to, handle that tailback, going either direction and maybe going against the direction of the flow of the play when they get the ball to him. And Trey Madden is almost as good a receiver as Buck. I mean, he's a heck of a receiver. So you do see them doing things that seem to make a whole lot of sense for this personnel group. I thought the other thing, Max Brown was back and throwing the ball really well. And the combination of Max and Cody, Cody just seems to be more on top of his game in terms of throwing the ball, just getting on top of the ball and just driving it. A lot of the short, quick stuff and that, he's really driving the ball in there. It was like, wow, they took off, took a few weeks off, then they got back in the groove last week, but really looked like they've come, a significant way already this summer.
Melvin had a question, Dan, and I know one of these guys has been out at practice, so maybe you could share some thoughts on that. But he said, with fall coming up soon, can you tell me a little about two incoming freshmen who are at skill positions where death might be a question? Bryce Dixon at tight end and Rashid Johnson at wide receiver. That's from Melvin.
Yeah, I don't think I have enough of a feel on, Rashid, who I think is one of the ones that Sark has said is going to get a chance both ways in the first 5 days of practice. He's going to go both ways. So I did get to see Bryce, and he started out. He will be the smallest of the tight end group. He started out with the receivers, actually, the other night, and then last night, and then he ended up. They kind of bumped him down to the tight ends. They only had three. Chris Wilson, I think, is going to be a real factor. He's doing a lot of things. He's 6'5", 255, real athletic, a guy who can and absolutely can catch the ball. He really knows what he's doing, and he's kind of with Jalen Fitzpatrick wasn't there, and Randall hasn't been there yet. So Chris is kind of running the tight end show, and you can tell Bryce doesn't have the build of the classic tight end, but he's a tight end that can get deep, and he can certainly catch the ball, certainly jump. He's not going to be somebody watching him work on their blocking. He's not going to be somebody that's real comfortable right now, blocking people at the line of scrimmage, but that's not what he does. He runs and jumps and catches it, and he does look like a wide receiver in a kind of a small tight end body. I mean, not, and we're just guessing because we can't ask them how much they weigh. We don't talk to them about that. But, in the 230s, which would make him kind of a smallish tight end at this point. But again, he's, just getting out of high school. So he does have the frame that he could certainly get bigger, but he is a guy that can get deep quickly and catch the ball. And those are two pretty good things, I think, it'd be interesting to see how they use him. They do seem to be doing more H-back stuff, which, again, makes a lot of sense. I'll be interested to see how that all develops. They were working with him a lot, on much like Adore in terms of, where to line up and how to release and all that kind of thing, and it's at the pace they're going for a kid that's their first second practice out of high school, that's a challenge. So, and they're not slowing down for them. They're kind of trying to help them out between plays or when they do the walkthrough and just say and then by the end of practice you see them getting in some and But I think he will be able to contribute in some particular ways this fall.
Rashid Johnson was in there. I missed the last couple ones because I was in Baltimore. But when he was in there, he was actually playing defense. What I saw, I don't know if he was out there again last night, Dan.
I did not see him on defense last night. So we saw Sua and Chris and Kevon and Josh and Gerald Bowman. It was kind of the veteran crew more than anything last night. So I'm not sure if Rashid and how they're going to do. It'll be interesting to see also with the guys that are going to go both ways the first 5 days. Do they alternate for them in the summer? Do they do defense one day and offense the next day? We'll see how that goes when we watch, Adoree and Juju and those guys as they move along with the summer practices.
Here's one from Tony Gomez. He says, it's the second time writing the show. I really enjoy the podcast. You guys do an awesome job. Well, thank you, Tony. On Monday's podcast, you did not mention names but hinted at the possible return of former players that were currently not with the team. I read somewhere about a potential return of Junior Pomme. If I'm not mistaken, it was either Christian Hayward or Devontae Wilson as well. Is there any truth behind that? Pomme was cleared of all charges, and Kiffin did not allow him to return. We could use another tight end, and Pomme was highly rated. Thanks again, and keep up the good work. Tony.
Tony, the strongest possibility you hear is Patrick Hall, who had gone back to Ventura Junior College last year. And I know, a lot of that becomes the grades and transfer credits and all that kind of thing and what have you. I think he has the best. I hadn't thought about Christian Hayward. Haven't heard that. about that possibility. You come up with a couple of names there that I guess USC, it would be the only way to expand the roster with scholarship player, with new scholarship players, because they'd be really old scholarship players. They wouldn't count against the 15 for last year or the 25 for next year. Be the only way you could do it. Haven't heard those names. There's something to think about. I'll ask around and see if anybody knows if there's anything going on, under the radar for a couple of other kids who've left their team. But interesting thought.
Let's see. Then we have one from Charlie and Carson. He says, is it me or is it every recruit who's being recruited outside of California always mentions loving USC due to tradition and quote-unquote Reggie Bush? I'm an avid fan of USCfootball.com. Read the articles, and I constantly see his name mentioned. Everybody makes mistakes, but USC should look at the fact that these high-profile recruits remember Reggie Bush for what he brought to the university on the field. Yes, I know that because of him we had sanctions, but let's be honest, USC wasn't the only one who had players do what he did. Do you think his number will ever be restored? I thought we were the nation of second chances and sometimes third chances. That's Charlie from Carson writing in about Reggie. Well,
Charlie, yeah, that's a really good observation. It is amazing that, 10 years ago, those kids were paying attention to Reggie Bush. I mean, that was and you're not, the first one to notice that they, and I think it might be the only thing Paul D., the late, great Paul D., was right about, saying how USC would benefit with all these kids wanting to come there because of Reggie Bush. So that's why USC was supposed to, put a, 24-hour, monitor on Reggie and, with a retired FBI guy, I guess. I don't know. But you're right. It's had an impact. And you can, all you want, say, go away, don't be associated. You can't take Reggie out of their minds. I mean, some of us are not very happy with, some of the, the selfishness involved and lack of concern about USC that happened there, or the failure to maybe, make things right away. But clearly a double standard. I mean, if Reggie was probably, if you looked at all the Heisman Trophy winners, you looked at all the big stars in college football, was Reggie that far out of line with an awful lot of this? No, obviously not. And most of him have gone completely unpunished, unremarked upon, certainly unbanned, from their college program. So yeah, yes, he got screwed and the NCAA knew it and didn't care. But it's interesting that that no matter what, they can't take that out of those kids' minds. And those kids are, what were they, 8 years old at the time? And it's true. It's amazing. But give Paul D. credit. He got that one right.
He did, actually. I mean, that's the one thing when you look back and say, oh, Reggie Bush is going to get you 30 recruits if you're a USC. And well, it's happened like that and even more. People are still talking about Reggie Bush that many years later. So it's an interesting question.
I think it's having more of an impact now, which is really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inexplicable. I'm not even, but it's real. It's just hard to know how stuff happens like that, but it's not, that's the correct observation.
It definitely is real. Well, one last thing before we let you go, Dan, I just wanted to let people know, I got an email from one of our old buddies, Barry Markowitz, who's Abe Markowitz's father. And he said, for the podcast, he said, tell your audience Abe would love for USC fans in Cardinal and Gold cheering for him Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Honda Center in Anaheim. Abe's team, the Portland Thunder, plays the L.A. Kiss. Abe has been the starting center since he joined the team 2 weeks ago. So I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know much about these teams or this league, but that was the word I got, Dan, that Abe Markowitz is back playing some football.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's hurt, the USC guys like John Martinez and Abe, if you didn't make it through the first cut in the NFL camps, very often you'd go to Canada, you know, the Canadian League. But they're going on strike today. So nobody knows what's happening with the Canadian League. And I think, you know, these guys probably have a pretty good shot to play in Canada. But so that bumped. And I think Abe just decided, what the heck, you know, this is football. Instead of just working out and trying to get ready, I'll just go ahead and play. So I think he had a couple of pretty good games for Portland, and they play the Kiss, which it's weird. I was talking to Barry Markowitz, and I guess the Kiss, you would think, and, you know, in Orange County and a big L.A. presence would have some USC guys, but it doesn't look like they do, or almost that many Southern California players. But Abe will be there. You know, I think the tickets are pretty inexpensive, I think, and one of the things about the Arena League, I think, you know, everybody runs a shotgun, and that center is pretty important. And Abe is like this, you know, snapping machine. I mean, he snaps the ball, shotgun snaps as well as anybody, you know, in the country. And they look at it as, well, this will give me some good film, you know, if you decide to go to Canada. And it's more, you know, it's closer to real football, and it's you know, if you want a stepping stone to the NFL, possibly. I mean, it's possible, but this gives you some film that the Canadian guys can look at, and they're going to come on strike sometime, we would guess. But that'd be great, yeah. So 7 o'clock Saturday, the Honda Center.
All right. Well, thanks, Dan, for that. Thanks, Mr. Markowitz, for sending that in. Good luck to Abe this weekend, and. We'll keep watching USC football. Summer workouts continue. We'll have more reports on uscfootball.com. We are going to try to do a recruiting podcast with Gerard, so stay tuned for that. Gerard and I just got back from Baltimore. We're at the Rivals 5-Star Challenge, so lots of information on the site about USC recruits. Lots of exclusive video we'll have up on uscfootball.com. Make sure to check that out. Well, thanks again, Dan, for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, enjoyed it. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, everyone else, thank you so much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.